A woman who claimed self-defense in the murder of six separate men soliciting the services of her as a sex worker. Her name, Aileen Wuornos. Was she really defending herself, or was she a cold-blooded serial killer bent on murdering men who tried to pay her for sex? These are the questions we ask today on the story of Aileen Wuornos on the dark side of Wikipedia.
Sometimes the human mind goes to dark places. Sometimes those dark delusions turn into a reality. A reality so shaded and gray, once all is said and done, the healthy mind is drawn into the documented retelling of these tragic events, trying to find logic, reason, and understanding where there may be none at all. This is the dark side of Wikipedia.
Aileen Carol Lee Wuornos was an American serial killer and sex worker who murdered seven men in Florida in 1989 and 1990 by shooting them at point-blank range. Wuornos claimed that her victims had either raped or attempted to rape her while they were soliciting sex from her, and that all of the homicides were committed in self-defense. She was sentenced to death for six of the murders and was executed by lethal injection on October 9th of 2002. The 2003 film Monster chronicles Wuornos' story from childhood until her first murder conviction. It stars Charlize Theron as Wuornos, the performance that earned Theron an Academy Award for Best Actress. Wuornos was born Aileen Carol Pittman in Rochester, Michigan on February 29th, 1956. Her Finnish-American mother, Diane Wuornos, was 14 years old when she married Aileen's English-American father, 16-year-old Leo Dale Pittman, on June 3rd of 1954. Aileen's older brother, Keith, was born on March 14th, 1955, after less than 2 years of marriage. And 2 months before Aileen was born, Diane filed for divorce. Wuornos never met her father, as he was incarcerated at the time of her birth. Leo Dale Pittman was diagnosed with schizophrenia and later convicted of sex crimes against children. He committed suicide by hanging in prison on January 30th, 1969. In January 1960, when Wuornos was almost 4 years old, Diane abandoned her children, leaving them with their maternal grandparents, Lori and Britta Wuornos, both alcoholics who legally adopted Keith and Aileen on March 18th, 1960. By the age of 11, Wuornos began engaging in sexual activities in school in exchange for cigarettes, drugs, and food. She had also engaged in sexual activities with her brother. Wuornos said that her alcoholic grandfather had sexually assaulted and beaten her when she was a child. Before beating her, he would force her to strip out of her clothes. In 1970, at age 14, she became pregnant, having been raped by an accomplice of her grandfather. Wuornos gave birth to a boy at a home for unwed mothers on March 23, 1971, and the child was placed up for adoption. A few months after her son was born, she dropped out of school. At about the same time that her grandmother died of liver failure, when Wuornos was 15, her grandfather threw her out of the house, and she began supporting herself as a prostitute and living in the woods near her old home. On May 27, 1974, at age 18, Wuornos was arrested in Jefferson County, Colorado, for driving under the influence, disorderly conduct, and firing a .22-caliber pistol from a moving vehicle. She was later charged with failure to appear. In 1976, Wuornos hitchhiked to Florida, where she met 69-year-old yacht club president Louis Gratz Fell. They married quickly, and the announcement of their nuptials was printed in the local newspaper's society pages. However, Wuornos continually involved herself in confrontations at their local bar and went to jail briefly for assault. She also hit Fell with his own cane, leading him to gain a restraining order against her within weeks of the marriage. She returned to Michigan, where on July 14, 1976, she was arrested in Antrim County and charged with assault and disturbing the peace for throwing a cue ball at a bartender's head. On July 17th, her brother Keith died of esophageal cancer, and Wuornos received $10,000 from his life insurance. Wuornos and Fell annulled their marriage on July 21st after only 9 weeks. In August of 1976, Wuornos was given a $105 fine for drunk driving. She used the money inherited from her brother to pay the fine and spent the rest within 2 months buying luxuries, including a new car, which she wrecked shortly afterwards. On May 20th, 1981, Warnos was arrested in Edgewater, Florida for the armed robbery of a convenience store where she stole $35 and two packs of cigarettes. She was sentenced to prison on May 4th, 1982 and released on June 30th, 1983. On May 1st, 1984, Warnos was arrested for attempting to pass forged checks at a bank in Key West. On November 30th, 1985, she was named as a suspect in the theft of a revolver and ammunition in Pasco County. On January 4th, 1986, Warnos was arrested in Miami and charged with car theft, resisting arrest, and obstruction of justice for providing identification bearing her aunt's name. Miami police officers found a .38 caliber revolver and a box of ammunition in the stolen car. On June 2, 1986, Vusilla County deputy sheriffs detained Warnos for questioning after a male companion accused her of pulling a gun in his car and demanding $200. Warnos was found to be carrying spare ammunition, and police discovered a .22 pistol under the passenger seat she had occupied. Around this time, Warnos met Tyra Moore, a hotel maid, at a Daytona Beach lesbian bar. They moved in together, and Warnos supported them with her earnings as a prostitute. On July 4, 1987, Daytona Beach police detained Warnos and Moore at a bar for questioning regarding an incident in which they were accused of assault and battery with a beer bottle. On March 12, 1988, Warnos accused a Daytona Beach bus driver of assault. She claimed that he pushed her off the bus following a confrontation. Moore was listed as a witness to the incident. Up until her execution, Warnos claimed to still be in love with Moore. So, there's a lot to unpack there. Kind of the early years, Aileen, prior to getting into the murdering sprees. But doesn't really seem to have a lot of the ingredients that are going to make a well-balanced individual that's not going to kill people.
It makes me sad,
yeah,
actually, in a way, because, well, very sad for the young girl. Because you know where it ends up. And, you know, and even this far into the story. But there was never a way it wasn't going to end up like that. Nobody cared for her. Nobody loved her. Nobody had any compassion or helped her or taught her, you know? It's like, that's just sad. Like, when a child has to basically raise themselves and, you know, because it said at 11 she was having sex for food?
Yeah.
Like, that's so sad.
And she got pregnant at 14, but her parents were married at what, like 14 and 16 or something?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just picturing this in my mind today, being an adult and being a parent. The idea of my daughter going and marrying a 16-year-old and going off and living in the sticks in Michigan. What could possibly go wrong? I mean,
well, and then she like moves out at 15, but lives in the woods out by her house. Like, that's just so sad. It's like, so I'm listening to all of this and I'm like, how is it not going to end up that way?
Yeah.
You know, and damn her parents and her grandparents, like that just, and her parents were kids. I get that. But it's like, you have a responsibility. Once you agree to raise that child, you know, you can give your child up for adoption and, you know, give your child a chance, but they didn't choose what was best for the child.
No.
Nobody did.
No.
Ever. Like, that's what's so sad.
It is.
So, and yeah, she's going to make all the bad decisions, every bad decision, repeatedly.
And then you go, why do you make those decisions? Well, here's her compass. Someone took it and smashed it, then it got ran over by a semi, and then it burned and melted. That's this little lob of melted metal
what she
here.
She carries with her.
That's her compass.
From point A to point B.
Yeah. So that's why she is the way she is. It doesn't excuse her actions, but it answers the question of that's why she is the way she is. And at that point, what do you expect different? You know, let's continue into the story as we enter the chapter simply titled Murders. Warnos murdered seven men with a period of 12 months. Richard Charles Mallory, age 51, November 30th, 1989, electric store owner in Clearwater. Warnos' first victim was a convicted rapist whom she claimed to have killed in self-defense. Wornos claims she was sodomized and brutally beaten after being driven to an abandoned area for sexual requests. 2 days later, a Wasilla County deputy sheriff found Mallory's abandoned vehicle. On December 13th, his body was found several miles away in a wooded area. He had been shot several times. Two bullets to the left lung were found to have been the cause of death. David Andrew Spears, age 47, a construction worker in Winter Garden. He was declared missing as of May 19, 1990. On June 1, 1990, his naked body was found along U.S. Route 19 in Florida in Citrus County. He had been shot six times by a .22 pistol. Charles Edmund Carscotten, age 40, May 31, 1990, a part-time rodeo worker. On June 6, 1990, his body was found in Pasco County. He had been shot nine times with a .20 caliber weapon. The body had been wrapped in an electric blanket and was badly decomposing when found. Witnesses saw Wornos in possession of Carscotten's car, and Wornos had also pawned a gun identified as belonging to him as well. Peter Abram Simmons, age 65, retired merchant seaman. On June 1990, Simmons left Jupiter, Florida for Arkansas. On July 4, 1990, his car was found in Orange Springs, Florida. Moore and Wornos were seen abandoning the car, and Wornos' palm print was found on the interior door handle. His body was never found. Troy Eugene Burses, age 50, sausage salesman from Ocala. On July 31, 1990, he was reported missing. On August 4, 1990, his body was found in a wooded area along State Road 19 in Marion County and had been shot twice. Charles Richard Dick Humphreys, age 56, September 11, 1990, retired U.S. Air Force major, former state child abuse investigator, and former chief of police. On September 12, 1990, his body was found in Marion County. He was fully clothed and had been shot six times in the head and torso. His car was found in Shawnee County. Walter Gino Antino, age 62, a trucker, security guard, and police reservist. On November 19, 1990, Antonio's nearly naked body was found near a remote lodging road in Dixie County. He had been shot four times. 5 days later, his car was found in Brevard County. On July 4, 1990, Wornos and Moore abandoned Simmons' car after they were involved in an accident. Witnesses who had seen the woman driving the victim's car provided police with their names and descriptions, resulting in a media campaign to locate them. Police also found some of the victim's belongings in pawn shops and retrieved fingerprints matching those found in the victim's car. Wornos had a criminal record in Florida, and her fingerprints were on file. On January 9, 1991, Wornos was arrested on an outstanding warrant at The Last Resort, a biker bar in Wasilla County. Police located Moore the next day in Scranton, Pennsylvania. She agreed to elect a confession from Wornos in exchange for immunity from prosecution. Moore returned with the police to Florida, where she was put up in a motel. Under police guidance, she made numerous telephone calls to Wornos, pleading for help in clearing her name. 3 days later, on January 16, 1991, Wornos confessed to the murders. She claimed the man had tried to rape her, and she killed them in self-defense. A year later, on January 14, 1992, Wornos went to trial for the murder of Mallory. Although previous convictions are normally inadmissible in criminal trials, under Florida's Williams rule, the prosecution was allowed to introduce evidence related to her other crimes to show a pattern of illegal activity. On January 27, 1992, Wornos was convicted of Mallory's murder with help from Moore's testimony. At her sentencing, psychiatrists for the defense testified that Wornos was mentally unstable and had been diagnosed with borderline personality disorder and antisocial personality disorder. 4 days later, she was sentenced to death. On March 31, 1992, Wornos pled no contest to the murders of Humphreys, Burris, and Spears, saying she wanted to get right with God. In her settlement to the court, she said in part, "I wanted to confess to you that Richard Mallory did violently rape me, as I've told you, but these others did not. They only began to start to." On May 15, 1992, Wornos was given three more death sentences. In June 1992, Wornos pled guilty to the murder of Carscotten. In November 1992, she received her fifth death sentence. The defense made efforts during the trial to introduce evidence that Mallory had been tried for intent to commit rape in Maryland and that he had been committed to a maximum security correctional facility that provided remediation to sexual offenders. Records obtained from that institution reflected that from 1958 to 1962, Mallory was committed for treatment and observation resulting from a criminal charge of assault with intent to rape and received an overall 8 years of treatment from the facility. In 1961, it was observed of Mr. Mallory that he possessed strong sociopathic trends. The judge refused to allow this to be admitted in court as evidence and denied Wuornos' request for a retrial. In February 1993, Wuornos pled guilty to the murder of Antonia and was sentenced to death again. No charges were brought against her for the murder of Siemens, as his body was never found. In all, she received 6 death sentences. Wuornos told several inconsistent stories about the killings. She claimed initially that all 7 men had raped her while she was working as a prostitute, but later recanted the claim of self-defense, citing robbery and desire to leave no witnesses as a reason for murder. During an interview with filmmaker Nick Broomfield, when she thought the cameras were off, she told him that it was in fact self-defense, but she cannot stand being on death row, where she had been for 10 years at that point and wanted to die. Assessed using the psychopathy checklist, Wuornos scored 32 out of 40. The checklist evaluates individuals on a 20-item list of antisocial and interpersonal behaviors, with each item being scored at a 0, 1, or 2, and thus a maximum score of 40. Depending on location and research perspective, scores above 20 or 30 are consistent with a diagnosis of psychopathy. So there you go. Obviously, she wasn't well, to put it mildly, and kind of left unchecked, kind of got out there and did her thing.
And, you know, I honestly, with her childhood, she could probably, and this is a guess, I have no idea, but she could, I could see someone like her killing people without really much remorse.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, because I think if you've been victimized a lot in your life, then you see all of them as people who are coming to victimize you. So you're going to get them before they get you.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't value.
In her case, it was murder.
Yeah. And if you don't value your own life.
Which is a little more extreme than the average person.
It is.
But it just is not surprising to me at all.
No, it is. I'm sorry, I'm eating cheese in the middle of the show.
I was like, what are you doing?
But it's the end of the bag, so it's like gravel.
You got to eat when you can.
Sorry, everybody.
That.
Carol was speaking for a moment, so I ate some cheese. It's dried cheese.
I'll ramble for another
I'm good.
Minute.
My mouth is clear.
I could also understand. Well, I mean, maybe I can't really understand. I don't know why I just said that. But, like, I couldn't imagine being on death row day after day after day after day after day after day. Like, I could see me saying, you know what? I want him to do it.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine living like that. Couldn't imagine being in jail either. But, you know, that death row thing where that would just be, there's no way to live. That's why when people are on death row and they don't want to be executed, which I get, I think it would be kind of terrifying to know the time you're going to die.
Maybe. I mean, half the time it always gets moved.
Right. And which is kind of torture, too.
Yeah, I mean, it would be. I mean, you're preparing yourself to die. And then all of a sudden, we're going to change that again. Got a technicality here. So guess what? You got 2 more years now. At some point, you'd be like, just fucking kill me, you know, because the mental torture of it. I mean, although this is an interesting one. Me and Sean were talking about this on an episode earlier today. We're talking about the last meal thing when you're on death row.
I don't think I would have an appetite.
That's what I said. I said, you know, I don't know I'd have an appetite, but the fact that so many people are on death row for like decades before they get killed, maybe by that point you have an appetite because you've already kind of made peace with this fact. So maybe you're ready to eat. I don't know, but because it's not like you're sentenced to death and then in 3 weeks you're killed. It's
I'd be like, I don't want any food, but I'll take a bottle of bourbon.
Yeah. And just down it. I think that would be the only way to go. Can you do that? Can you request alcohol as part of your last meal? Is that something they do?
I don't have any idea. I don't have any experience with that.
Is that restricted? It's like, nope, sorry, you're not old enough.
Sorry,
for that
you're
yet.
Getting ready to have other drugs soon, and the combination just doesn't work.
I think that'd be the only way to do it. I mean, if you could, it's like, what did this person order? 10 bottles of Belvedere.
It's like, I'd like to take up heroin now, please.
Yeah, it's like, I tell you what, I'll do it myself by just doing all these drugs at once. And
I just couldn't imagine that. And, you know, living a life like she led, like, how, like, when was she ever happy? How was she ever happy? You know, maybe in that relationship with the woman, she was happy at some point, but they sure didn't know how to be good citizens of the world.
There's no compass to the happiness thing. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of superficialness, and it's a lot of, let's make it look like I'm happy, or let me do this to project a happy look. And but that's an empty department there. And it can
also get, there's a definite big old line between love and obsessiveness. Yeah. And sometimes people think they're in love, but you're just obsessed with that person. Mm-hmm. And someone like her, I could see being like that.
Yeah, very, very much so.
Very dysfunctional kind of relationship. I don't know.
Let's continue into the story of Aileen Wuornos here on the dark side of Wikipedia. Wuornos was incarcerated at the Florida Department of Corrections Broward Correctional Institution, death row for women, then transferred to the Florida State Prison for execution. Her appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court was denied in 1996. In 2001, petitioned to the Florida Supreme Court, she stated her intention to dismiss her legal counsel and terminate all pending appeals. "I killed those men," she wrote. "Robbed them as cold as ice, and I'd do it again, too. There's no chance in keeping me alive or anything because I'd kill again. I've hate crawling through my system. I'm so sick of hearing this she's crazy stuff. I've been evaluated so many times. I'm competent, sane, and I'm trying to tell the truth. I'm the one who seriously hates human life and would kill again." While her attorneys argue that she was not mentally competent to make such a request, Wuornos insisted that she knew what she was doing, and a court-appointed panel of psychiatrists agreed. In 2002, Wuornos began accusing prison matrons of tainting her food with dirt, saliva, and urine. She said she had overheard conversations among prison personnel trying to get me so pushed over the brink by them, I'd wind up committing suicide before the execution, and wishing to rape me before the execution. She also compared a strip searches, tight handcuffing, door kicking, frequent window checks, low water pressure, mildew on her mattress, and catcalling in distaste and a pure hatred towards me. Wuornos threatened to boycott showers and food trays when certain officers were on duty. "In the meantime, my stomach's growling away and I'm taking showers through the sink of my cell." Her attorney stated that Ms. Wuornos really just wants to have proper treatment, humane treatment, until the day she's executed. He added she believes what she's written. In the weeks before her execution, Wuornos gave a series of interviews to Broomfield and talked about being taken away to meet God and Jesus and the angels and whatever is beyond that. In her final interview, she once again charged that her mind was tortured at BCI and her head crushed by sonic pressure. Food poisonings and other abuses worsened, she said, each time she complained with the goal of making her appear insane or to drive her insane. She also turned on her interviewer. "You sabotaged my ass, society and the cops and the system. A raped woman got executed and was used for books and movies and shit." Her final on-camera words were, "Thanks a lot, society, for railroading my ass." Don Bodkins, a childhood friend of Wuornos, later told Broomfield that her verbal abuse was directed at society and the media in general, not at him specifically. Wuornos' execution took place on October 9, 2002. She died at 9:47 a.m. Eastern. She declined her last meal, which could have been anything under $20, and opted for a cup of coffee instead. Her last words were, "Yes, I would just like to say I'm sailing with the rock and I'll be back. Like Independence Day with Jesus, June 6, like the movie, big mothership and all. I'll be back. I'll be back." She was the 10th woman in the United States and the second in Florida to be executed since the 1976 United States Supreme Court decision restoring capital punishment. I gotta say, I'm really surprised she was talking about the follow-up to Independence Day, which happened on June 6th with the aliens and shit. how do you fuck that up? I mean, that of all the things, I guess I'm more struck by the fact that she fucked up Independence Day in her final statement, getting the whole day wrong. And
So let's review the beginning part of this episode today. And like We can start with her childhood again. You might want to read that part. Then you'll understand how she could fuck up the Independence Day thing.
Well, what I find interesting about everything that she said, and I'm not here to say that there was not maybe some sort of abuse or something like that going on in the prison system. I don't know the answer to it is what I'm saying.
My guess is... Like she,
it was like, victim.
It sounds like total mental illness by that point.
All of her laundry list of shit of mildew and this and that and a big.
Imagine there was mildew.
Yeah, from abuse to mildew, though, in kind of the same sentence, it's like, okay, it is once again an individual like this trying to be the victim of this whole thing.
Well, and I
when they're
so,
the perpetrator of the whole thing.
My guess, I don't know, but if, because I would imagine on death row, it's kind of not super social.
Yeah, a little dicey.
My guess is you're kind of in a room all day by yourself.
Yeah.
And year after year after year after year, when you're already mentally unstable, I think your mind would just turn on itself. And
I
so
agree.
Everybody's out to get you. Like, so I don't think she necessarily was playing the part of a victim. I think she totally thought she was.
She believed it. Yeah. I mean, that's the reality of it. I mean, the illness, that's...
And that's probably why she messed up the Independence Day reference. It's a guess. I don't know.
I mean, I get the delusions and everything else and, you know, thinking this are out to get you, but Independence Day? June 6th, really? The aliens? Yeah. And I'm coming back. But, you know, you're exactly right. You know, when you're in that sort of state and it's not exactly rehabilitation at that moment in time anymore.
Well, jail's not rehabilitation.
No. Or correctional. It's not correctional either for many people.
Oh, God. It's not at all.
No.
It's like go serve time.
Yeah.
In this really bizarro environment and come out of it and lead a productive life. That's what we expect of you.
Let's fuck with you as much as we can mentally, though, for the next many years, and then hope that you're going to be okay.
Not even hope.
Yeah.
You're expected to be okay.
Yeah. There's just you have no choice. Yeah. So not that surprising, but the aliens
and
shit.
You know, there's
shit.
So many people like her in this world who, you know... Children, it's happening all over. You know, it just bothers me that people have kids and they're not properly caring for them, or they can't properly care for them.
Sure.
Or you're 14 and you think, I'll marry my 16-year-old boyfriend and we'll have the baby. It'll be great. No, it's not going to be great. You know, you're not even old enough to work. But it just bothers me. And then that's how she ends up killing all these people.
Yeah.
And how else was that story going to end?
There wasn't really any bright paths for Aileen, I'm sorry to say.
And it's a sad life.
Yeah.
And then all that said, I mean, it's not just a sad life. Like, her life was really sad, but it affected so many other people's lives in horrific ways. So it wasn't just... You know, you neglected your child and didn't care for it or provide for it. That's sad. But that child grew up and affected. I mean, when you think about all those people, they all had families and parents and maybe children and siblings, friends. I mean, that reaches out there really deep. That has tentacles.
Yeah. I mean, and that's something that is so overlooked in our world. It's like, your choices, your decisions have consequences. And they may not be evident to you right now, but especially when it comes to the bringing of a human being up in this world, you fuck that up royally. Guess what? That one's going to go out and fuck up 10 other people.
Because she never knew consequences either. Like, she never had them. Nobody cared about her.
Yeah, she was just kind of there. And it's a real sad... And she was a victim of so many things in her life, but then she became the victimizer, which is quite often the pattern that happens. She took it to quite an extreme in terms of being the victimizer, but that the pattern repeats and repeats and repeats and repeats and repeats until something stops it. And... You know, God knows, obviously this was stopped or she was stopped, but all those lives affected. that is going to wrap up our part of the Aileen Wuornos story here on the Dark Side of Wikipedia. There is more. There is a final chapter to this story, and you can hear it when you become a Darksider. That's a supporter of our program. You sign up to be a Darksider at darksideofwiki.com, and then you'll get access to our final chapter portions of our episodes, access to our archive of episodes, and it's all commercial free. You can search Dark Side of Wikipedia on Patreon, or go to darksideofwiki.com and click Become a Dark Sider. Help support our program and keep us on the air. It's only $5 a month to get all the extras. We'll see you on the other side on the final chapter with our Darksiders as we wrap up the Aileen Wuornos story over there. Until next time, for Carol, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening to The Dark Side of Wikipedia.